You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Hi, this is Jim.
And this is Max.
Check out our podcast, The Step Over, the Liberty Ballers Podcast Network, for all of your Sixers needs.
Player analysis, game breakdowns, who would look coolest in a headband, and more.
Subscribe to Liberty Ballers Podcast feed on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts, and check out The Step Over, a podcast about Sixers basketball.
Mostly.
Ladies and gentlemen, can I please have your attention? I've just been handed an urgent and horrifying news story, and I need all of you to stop what you're doing and listen.
Hello, Bleeding Green Nation, and welcome back to BGN Radio. This is episode number 29. I'm John Stolness from BleedingGreenNation.com. You can follow me on Twitter at John Stolness. We've got your Eagles-Redskins preview, week 17, the last week of the season, and folks, the Eagles got us here. It didn't look like they were going to be able to get us here, but they got us to week 17 with the team still in the playoff hunt. They don't have a spot locked up yet. They need a little help on Sunday, but they're going to try and take care of their own business against the Washington Redskins at 4:25 Eastern time. And joining me to talk about it and preview the matchup is the man behind BleedingGreenNation.com, the man, the myth, the legend, Brandon Lee Gauton. You can follow Brandon on Twitter at Brandon Gauton. BLG, how you feeling, buddy?
John, I'm doing well. The Eagles got us here to week 17, as you said. Will they make the playoffs? We'll talk about that more on this very podcast, but I'm just, at the very least, you know, let's all just be glad they made it this far. It is not some kind of lost season completely, at least. It's exciting. I mean, they won their last two games. They just beat the 12-3 Rams now, and the 10-5 Texans now. Like, two good teams, two quality opponents. Things are looking good. I mean, you know, if this team gets into the playoffs all of a sudden, it's not just like, oh, they snuck in, or, you know, they backslid in and one and done. I mean, you're thinking maybe they can go on another run. I don't know.
Well, they've shown they can be quality opponents over these last couple weeks, BLG. I think I remember reading this week that this is the first time in team history that they've beaten two 10-win teams back in back-to-back weeks. Obviously,
that's crazy.
Obviously, that's something that has to happen late in the season, you know, for teams to get 10 wins. But to beat a legitimate Super Bowl contender like the Rams and the Texans, who looked every bit a Super Bowl contender on Sunday, that was a very good Houston Texans team that the Eagles played and managed to beat on Sunday. And to win those two games, BLG, really showed that if they can get into the playoffs, if they can beat the Redskins and get a little help with the Bears taking care of business against the Vikings on Sunday and get that sixth wild card, it no longer matters to me that they're going to be on the road throughout the playoffs. They're showing me this finally looks like the 2017 team again. And it's not just because Nick Foles is a quarterback again for another stretch run. It just looks like this team is playing with confidence again.
Yeah, the team is really stepping up across the board. Now, obviously, Nick Foles is playing very well. The Texans game especially, to me, you know, I think better, even better.
Yeah, great
obviously
game.
Statistically, but just when you, the eye test, like, and he didn't even get off to a great start in that game. He didn't even play well throughout the entire game, but he really just built on his performance throughout the game. And are the Eagles the team that no one wants to face in the playoffs? I mean, I would label the Ravens that, given how they're 5-1 in their last six, and that one loss was in Kansas City in overtime, and I thought they played better than the Chiefs that day, to be honest with you. So it's probably them in all reality. But if we're just looking at the NFC, I mean, man, they're one of the hotter teams, certainly.
Yeah.
I mean, the Seahawks are playing well too. I mean, they just lost to the 49ers. Not great for them, but still, I mean, they're still a very good team. There's other good teams, obviously, in the playoffs. I mean, the Saints have struggled a little bit here. They locked up the one seed, so they're playing home games, and they're always going to be tough down there in the Superdome. So not saying by any means the Eagles are have a cakewalk to making it to the Super Bowl, but man, I mean, if they're going to play this well, you're going to get the quarterback play that you're getting. I think you kind of have to remember that for as good as Nick Foles can possibly be, you know, we've certainly seen him turn in some not so good games. So you kind of have to have that thought in your head that he could come out one day and really not look so hot. Overall, I mean, there's just things to suddenly feel good about with this team. And it's kind of crazy. It's really crazy how if you listen to the Rams preview show that we did here, John, I'm sure it matches up not at all with what we are saying right now. But that's the NFL. That's the craziness of it. Things can change in such a short amount of time. And that's why we watch, because it's not necessarily over when you think it is. Sometimes by some miracle, things can happen. And here the Eagles are needing to get help from your favorite quarterback, John.
My boy, Kirk Cousins. That's right.
The biggest big game quarterback there ever was.
I've come off that hill now.
I know. I'm unfairly teasing you. But I mean, that's the situation. So the Eagles need to win. And, you know, I've seen a lot of people saying, you know, you can't discount Washington as an automatic win. And trust me, I don't think the Eagles are doing that for a team that only won one more game that they've lost this season. Like, they have 7 losses. I'm sure they're not in the mindset that wins just come automatically to them. And even these past 2 weeks, they've had to fight to the end, mm-hmm. you know, to win those games. It's not like they're rolling teams here and they're going to get into a mindset where, at least I would think or hope, where it's going to be some kind of letdown scenario. But they have to avoid that this week. And then they have to hope that the Chicago Bears can somehow go into Minnesota, where the Vikings have played well at home mm-hmm. this season. I think they've only lost 2 games. The one was to the Bills in that weird, I guess, total just trap game scenario. And the other was to the Saints, who are obviously very good. So it's going to be a tough task for Chicago. If they do it and the Bears win and the Eagles win, we're talking about playoffs, yeah, baby, man. Number 16.
Yeah, and, you know, I think, you know, we'll get into the Washington game in just a minute, you know, and the Eagles need this game, so they're going to come out and they're going to play hard, but obviously you can't just say for sure that the Eagles are going to beat Washington. They need to take care of their own business. They can't be scoreboard watching at all while they're playing their game in the nation's capital, but obviously we will be doing that for them, and we're going to be watching that Bears-Vikings game very closely, and you have to ask yourself, if you are the Bears, whether it's in your best interest to beat the Vikings on Sunday afternoon. Adam Schefter tweeted out that Chicago would be a 3.5-point home favorite if they took on Minnesota in the playoffs, and a 5.5-point favorite versus Philadelphia. So Vegas thinks that the Bears would be better off playing to win on Sunday by beating the Vikings and taking their chances with the Eagles next weekend. That's good news for the Eagles, I guess. I mean, Chicago's not looking at the Vegas lines and all that, and making their decisions based on that. And we know that Eagles coaches have been reaching out to the Bears this week to urge them to play full out, play the starters. And, you know, we know Peterson reached out to Coach Nagy, and we know that Mike Rowe reached out to his guy on.
Vic Fangio,
the offensive defensive coordinator, and saying, you know, play hard, play, you know, beat the Vikings for us. You know, that stuff's cute, but, you know, the Bears are going to do what's best for the Bears. And the game we also need to be paying attention to is the 49ers-Rams game, because if the Rams are blowing out the 49ers at halftime, there's no incentive for the Bears to keep playing hard against the Vikings and to play their starters. So I'm just wondering, BLG, if anybody called the 49ers.
Yeah, I mean, they should, right? And now I was looking back at the 49ers halftime scores here, because I thought that might be a little bit relevant with this game coming up. And in only 2 out of their last 7 starts, which is, I'm taking their last 7 because that is the beginning of the great Nick Mullins era in San Francisco. Yeah. They've only been down in 2 of those games there. So I think that's something to kind of, and look, they played well kind of recently. Like they took the Bears down to the wire. They only lost 13-9. They beat the Broncos when the Broncos were kind of looking a little bit better than they have mm-hmm. recently. They beat the Seahawks at home. Now, again, all those games were at home, so kind of dicey. Like, this game is going to be in Los Angeles. But I think maybe, you know, Kyle Shanahan going into L.A., he doesn't want to be upstaged by, you know, pretty boy Sean McVay. Like, he wants to be the pretty boy. He wants to be the offensive mastermind. So I think there's some pride there. I think, you know, I think the Niners are going to come out and give some good fight. And really, that's all you need. You don't even need them to win the game necessarily. I mean, that'd be nice too, potentially, because then the Eagles could be playing in LA in on wild card weekend, which I think I might like to see that more than playing in Chicago.
That would be fun.
Even if they don't, I think they can at least keep it within two scores. Like I really feel confidently about that. And I think if you're the Bears and you see that the Niners are down 10 at halftime, like you can't pull your starters.
No, you
then
can't.
Like, 10 points, that's yeah. nothing. Like they could, you know, who, let's say like they return the opening kickoff, all of a sudden they're, you know, or the, you know, first kickoff of the second half, all of a sudden they're only down three. Like it's way too volatile for them to kind of just totally assume that that's going to be a sure loss. And, you know, I know it's not necessarily likely the Niners are 10-point underdogs, but the upside's worth it, right? Like, if you're the Bears and you can get a first-round bye, like, I would take that. So I would just certainly take the chance at that. And now, for on the other side, John, you kind of asked about who, if the Bears can kind of decide here, who do they want to play, the Vikings or the Eagles? I mean, to me,
yeah.
it has to be
the Vikings. Yeah.
Like it has to be. I know there's some kind of thought about there about like you don't want to play him three times or a division rival. Like no, like the Vikings to me are just the worst team right now. Like you're talking about Kirk Cousins again, who has never won a big game in his life. And I know whatever, maybe it's a narrative, but like the numbers bear it out. You've seen it. Like he just does not consistently, regularly beat good teams. I don't see it with that Vikings team. I think Nick Foles, when he is playing at his very highest level, is certainly more dangerous than Kirk Cousins. And I think Doug Peterson is a better head coach than Mike Zimmer. So to me, if I'm the Bears, I want to play the Vikings. At the same time, I think when you're talking about motivation to win, I think there's something to the fact that, like, hey, you know, we knocked our division rival out of the playoffs. Like, I like that mm-hmm. a little bit. That's not going to be the main motivator there, but I like that personally. So, again, me, I would want to play the Vikings if I'm the Bears, but don't listen to that, Bears. Just, you know, go out and beat the Vikings.
Yeah, I'll point out that 30 years ago in 1988, the Eagles got into the playoffs by beating Dallas in Dallas and needing the Jets to beat the Giants, and it was a huge upset victory. Everybody my age remembers the Altoon touchdown catch in 1988 that helped the underdog Jets beat the Giants and helped get the Eagles into the playoffs for the first time in forever in 1988 during Buddy Ryan's third season with the team, I think it was that year. And then in 2008, we all remember all the help the Eagles needed to get into the playoffs, and eventually ended up getting them to the NFC Championship game that year against the Cardinals. But that was the year they beat Dallas. What was it, 44-6? Yeah, 44-6, and to sneak into the playoffs. And then we know the run that they went on there. Donovan McNabb went into Minnesota and went into New York and won two playoff games and almost beat the Cardinals in Arizona to get back to the Super Bowl. So you never know. You know, that you never know what you. The Eagles really don't need all that much help. They just need one team, a better team, to beat a worse team, and for them to beat the Redskins in order to get in. So. Yeah, there's a little history on their side here too. If you're the Eagles, maybe thinking back to 10 and 30 years ago, kind of, it's nice that it kind of ends up on the eights here. You know, we're looking back at these, week 17 win and need some help scenarios, finishing it with years on the eights. Let's talk about Nick Foles though. You mentioned real quick, you know, just for a second that, you know, when he's playing at and a level like he's playing at right now, he is extremely tough to beat. Jason Kelsey said this week that there's no way Foles should be a backup in this league, that he is a starting quarterback. And, you know, the Foles versus Wentz controversy has quieted down a little this week. I think it's mostly this week been a celebration of Foles and how he's now leading this team on a second straight run to the postseason. And, you know, this is, we've seen from Nick Foles, I think, an evolution in his game a little bit. What we saw against the Texans was just a terrific performance. And there's, you know, he had a couple throws here and there, but the thing you notice about him, BLG, is just how calm he is in these situations. When things should be going crazy, that's when he settles down, you know, and that's what makes him a good closer. That's what makes him so good in the clutch like this, is that he is able to maintain calm and be serene when everything, in situations where other quarterbacks and other people would probably be leaping out of their skin. What do you make of Nick Foles right now as he's hopefully getting this team back into the postseason?
Yeah, I think that's a really key point there. I think one of the biggest criticisms I've had of Nick Foles in the past is I'm not really sure what he was actually good at. Like, you know, I know he can do some things, but like, what is he actually like really good at? What is that thing you point to and being like, that's it? You know, that's the thing that Nick Foles can do. And I think it's become more apparent to me than it was before that that is exactly it, that he can be collected and calm and cool and, you know, come up in the clutch like we saw on Sunday. That is something he is good at, and we saw it in the playoff run, obviously, as well. And I probably didn't put enough stock in that. But I also think that Nick Foles is not the same player he was when he was first here. I firmly believe this. And maybe that's just me trying to explain it to myself why I was probably wrong about Nick Foles. But there's a part of me that believes that, at least, that, you know, I feel like he just underwent a transformation when he was away, because, you know, he was this, you know, he came up, he obviously had that good year in 2013, and they were winning games with him still in 2014, although, I always talk about how they were scoring historical amount of touchdowns on special teams and defense, so kind of made him look a little bit better than he was playing, in my opinion. But, you know, then he went away, and then he struggled in St. Louis, and then he thought about retiring. And I just think something transformed with him. Like, he had a new perspective on life, and he's talked about that a lot. And he's written about it as well. So I think that's something to kind of remember. And something that, you know, when we're talking about Carson versus Foles, again, which isn't even a real debate to me. I mean, like, there isn't a debate. And Doug continues to shut it down, too. Like, Doug is like, no, Carson's a long-term guy. It's not even a conversation. The only debate is people, like, in the media or fans, like, debating it. The team, there's no team debate. You know, there's just not.
Right,
So I think it's important to remember, like, Carson Wentz is only in his third year, guys. Like, he's not a finished product, and not just in terms of who he is as a player and like working on his mechanics and that stuff. I'm talking about as a human being too. He's only 25 years old. Like, he's not fully developed, I think, to the point in the maturation progress where Nick Foles is at. Like, I think Nick Foles as a 30-year-old guy is significantly more mature. Not only, you know, I'm not saying like Carson's an immature, you know, punk. I'm not trying to say that. I'm just saying like where he is at mentally. I just think.
No, that's fair.
Nick is almost like wise beyond his years in that sense. And I don't think Carson, I don't think Carson's dumb, but I just don't think he has that life experience yet that Nick kind of had and went through that adversity. And I think maybe, you know, this experience that Carson's kind of going through where, you know, he's hearing, I'm sure, some of this questioning, how good is he, you know, Foles is better. Maybe that kind of causes him to reflect and kind of hopefully kind of find that peace and be like, you know what? No, like, I just have to worry about me and have confidence in my ability and just get healthy and get better and not worry about that. I think maybe that'll serve Carson well. I mean, maybe it won't. I'm not saying it's a guarantee, but I just think what I'm trying to say here is the growth that we saw with Nick Foles, that's still possible. Like, that could happen with Carson Wentz. And I think that's something that's important to remember. I will be interested to see. And maybe having Foles here and Carson being able to see how Nick transformed firsthand, you know, maybe that helps him in the long run. So that's something I've kind of just been thinking about since I saw that Foles performance on Sunday, which was very good.
You know, it's interesting when you talk about Foles in that way. It reminds me of the maturation process of Randall Cunningham after he left the Eagles when he went to the Vikings and transformed himself into a much different quarterback. You know, he learned from the mistakes that he made as a younger player and became, for a couple of seasons there in Minnesota, an unbelievable quarterback. And we saw the kind of talent and the kind of quarterback that he could be. And as far as Carson is concerned, I was watching a couple weeks ago, I think I was watching the America's Game NFL Films thing that they do for every Super Bowl winner. And they had a whole section in there about Carson Wentz and how good he is and how respected he is around the league. And you watch the plays that he was making in 2017 and you think about some of the games that he won. The Carolina game on the road, that was a pressure win. That was a clutch win that he led that team on. That game against the Giants where he led the team into position for, Jake Elliott to kick the 61-yarder. There's a special NFL Films Turning Point feature that they do about how Carson Wentz suckered the Giants into allowing them to get Alshon Jeffrey for a catch along the sideline right before that final kick. The Rams game where he tore his knee up, he stays in the game and throws his fourth touchdown pass of the game in a seesaw offensive struggle against the Rams to put the team back on top. That was another clutch play. We've seen Carson play like that. I think this year we've seen an antsier Carson Wentz, and there's probably a number of reasons for it. One, he's probably not as healthy as he was last year. It's almost certain he's not as healthy as he was last year. Who knows when the back injury cropped up this year, but even if he didn't have the back injury at first, there was getting dumped into the middle of the season without any training camp. And I keep stressing that, and I think that's important. He didn't have an opportunity to work his way into the season. It's kind of like getting thrown into a pot of boiling water, you know, and it's understandable that he would be jumpy. The other part is, last year he missed out on the playoff run in the Super Bowl, and you know he wanted that so badly for himself this year. And I think when you start losing some games, when the offense isn't doing what you want it to do, when your skill position players aren't the same as they were last year, and let's not kid ourselves, the offensive line wasn't being as productive for him early in the season as it is being for Nick Foles right now. I think you got in Carson Wentz, a guy who started to try to do too much, who tried to play hero ball, who didn't let the game come to him, who tried to force things. And we see Nick Foles as a guy who just, he lets the game come to him. Wentz is obviously more talented, but I think this year we've seen an antsier Carson Wentz because I think he got dumped right into the middle of the season and he felt like, we're still in this Super Bowl window. I got to get us there. It's my turn to do it now. And when it started to get away from him a little bit, he didn't quite know how to ease up and let things come to him a little bit. Am I nuts? What do you think about that?
I think this is a very good and honest conversation about Carson, and I'm glad we had it, John, because I think there's just a lot of truth in there to what we said. Now, obviously, that's very self-serving. Right. I mean it. I just think, like, you know, I think there's been so much just noise lately around the whole Carson and Nick and everything. And it's just, you know, look at the BGN comments or Twitter and people are like, oh, you know, you got to get rid of Carson. It's like, no, it's not going to happen. Stop. And just because Nick Foles plays well doesn't mean that Carson sucks all of a sudden. I mean, I almost forgot this and I write about it. Like, Carson Wentz was named the number 3 player voted by his peers in the league last year. Like, think about that. Like, this guy is special. You can't just be so quick to, like, throw that. And again, Nick Foles has done some special things as well. But we all know the reality of a situation, people. Even if the Eagles wanted to keep him, it's not up to them. He's a mutual option. He's probably going to, you know, take it. He's probably going to, if the Eagles opt into it, it's only $20 million. He can pay back $2 million to become a free agent and get much more money than he would be able to get from the Eagles, and security and a starting job. So, like, it seems pretty clear that Nick Foles is going to not be here. That was always the case as soon as he signed that deal. Like, we've known that all along. There's no controversy. There's no, like, decision to be made. It's just, that's what it's probably going to be. I mean, the only thing the Eagles could do to ensure they have Nick Foles on the roster 100% is franchise tag him. And they're not going to franchise tag him. That costs 30 something million on your cap. The Eagles are already over the cap.
Not a chance.
In next year. So, like, no. And then you have a Carson Wentz contract coming up. So, like, no, it's not happening. But speaking of Nick Foles being on the move, John, there's some thought out there that he could be on the Giants in NFC East next year. He could be staying in the division. So Justin Herbert, obviously the top quarterback prospect, or at least one of them in the 2019 draft, is staying in Oregon. So that means one fewer quarterback prospect for the Giants. And if you go by the latest Vegas odds out there, the Giants are the favorites to sign Nick Foles. And you have the Pat Shurmur connection there. You know, obviously, he was Foles' offensive coordinator from 2013 to 2014 when Chip Kelly was still here. Does Nick Foles stay in the NFC East?
Well, why wouldn't he also? I mean, the Giants make a lot of sense, but, you know, the team the Eagles are going to play this Sunday could also be a possibility. You know, I think the Giants have more talent at the skill positions, which would probably make it a more enticing lure for Carson Wentz. For Nick Foles. Yeah, God help us. For Nick Foles. But, you know, I think that Washington is a possibility because Alex Smith is not going to be ready to go by next year, and they have nothing. They have nothing else on the shelves, and they probably won't.
Johnson, John, come on.
Yeah, you know, I mean, and hey, listen, they might be who they go. They end up having to ride into next year with, you know, and that's not what you want if you're a Redskins fan necessarily. But I think with Nick Foles, I think there's a very good chance he could stay in the NFC East for sure.
What if he just retires? I don't think that's impossible. I know that sounds crazy.
Foles, you think he could retire? Really?
I mean, he almost did it before. I don't think, and that's another reason why I almost like, even if you entertain the idea of him being the guy, you know, I just, because he almost did it before.
I don't see it, man. I don't see it.
I know it's not likely, I think, at this point. I don't even know if I wouldn't say it's not like, I just don't know. I don't think you can rule it out as much as other players. I think it's so much higher than other players. Because he's thought about it before, and I think the situation matters to him. He's not just going to go to, like, any team. You know what I mean? Like, he's not,
right.
Most players will just go to any team that gives them the most money. That is how most players operate. Probably how most players should operate. You know, go get the money you can get. And with Nick Foles' dad, Larry Foles, being a big business guy, that makes it hard for me to believe that he's just going to leave millions on the table. But I think just Nick, you know, he's wired differently. I don't think he's your average player in this situation. So I'm not going to say it's the most likely option, but if I'm, you know, putting out a pie chart there of the most likely options, it's not 0%. I mean, it's more than that. So
it's stomach turning to imagine him in a Giants uniform coming into Lincoln Financial Field and trying to beat the Eagles. It's just it makes my heart sad.
Yeah, keep Eli eight 4-18 in your last 22 games against the Eagles. So
don't give the number out. They'll make a change. You're gonna make it seem like Eli eats the Eagles up. He eats the Eagles up, man. You don't want to. You can't get rid of him.
2-time Super Bowl MVP,
right, exactly. He's a Hall of Famer. Let's talk real quick before we get into the injury report and the matchups. A couple other things, real quick. We could be looking, if the Eagles don't make the postseason, there's a number of players on this team who could be playing their last game in
Nick
Foles. An Eagles uniform, including Nick Foles for sure. But you're also looking at guys like Brandon Graham. Could be playing his last game as an Eagle. Jordan Hicks will be a free agent. Darren Sproles, Golden Tate, and Mike Wallace, Haloti Ngata. Those three guys are new additions to the team. But then you got a guy like Chris Long, who's been here now for a couple of years. All Eagles that the fans have really connected with, especially Graham, Hicks, Sproles, and Long. Which of these guys do you think we will be seeing for the last time on Sunday if the Eagles somehow don't get into the playoffs?
Man. You know, I look at this list, they easily could be all of them. That's sad.
Yeah. I mean, there's reasons not to bring Graham back, because if you want to keep Michael Bennett, you probably have to choose between one of those two guys, right?
And potentially.
And with Hicks, I mean, does the injury history give you pause?
It might give you incentive to re-sign him in terms of just, you know, his market not being so hot, and all of a sudden, you know, I always think back to, now this isn't a name that's going to thrill people here for sure, but I always think back to when Nate Allen hit free agency, I think, for the first time, and, you know, people thought he was going to have not like a super hot market, but, you know, people thought the Eagles weren't going to be able to re-sign him because, you know, he would have more of a market than what he would be reasonably worth. But sometimes, as it happened with him, and really as it happened with Brandon Graham when he was on the market before, some of these players, they go out there and the deals that they want aren't there, and they wait and they wait. And all of a sudden, the longer they're on the market, the more that price is going down, because all of a sudden that shows you that teams like aren't hot and heavy for them and trying to ink them right away. That could happen here, I think, with a number of players such as Jordan Hicks, such as, you know, Jay Ajayi, potentially, especially coming off that injury, maybe even Ronald Darby. You know, those injuries could potentially drive down their value to where the Eagles might be able to re-sign them on a one-year deal, you know, get them back kind of at least as a Band-Aid. And I think that's possible with those guys. Mike Wallace, I think you might be able to re-sign him on the cheap, although we will be talking about another certain wide receiver soon. Golden Tate, I don't think he's going to be back. Darren Sproles. Doug says he wants him back in 2019. The way he's playing, I want him back in 2019. I know people are going to be
like,
he's
on the field.
Yeah, he gets hurt, blah, blah, blah. I mean, like, guys, the Eagles running back situation is awful. I'm not saying they can't upgrade it this offseason, but like, if you can get Sproles on another pretty much minimum deal, I mean, to me, why not? Like, it's up to him. Because he could just retire, but he sounds like he might want to come back, and he's still not quite at that I think he needs 200 yards against Washington to hit that all-purpose yardage, fifth overall. So that would be kind of be more a little bit more incentive for him to come back so he gets to that top five. But the name here that would hurt to lose the most is Brandon Graham for me because, I mean, that's the guy who made the biggest play in Eagles history. And that's a guy who, like, I think that's so undersold too. Like, just, you know, this was a guy, everyone said he was a bust, which he never really was. He was just hurt. You know, and that kind of got him off to a slow start. And he was in the weird scheme change and all of that. And, like, he made the biggest play in franchise history. And obviously, we had the same initials, so I'm biased. But maybe that, a guy like that takes a team-friendly deal. Now, I don't know. You can never count on that. It's just, you know, some of these guys, that you might be able to get away with that. Again, you can't really count on it, but it's not impossible. So a lot of this is to say, the Eagles have some tough decisions to make this offseason, and I don't think there's a clear answer on them. And I think that's, you know, you could say that for any offseason in general, but it wasn't really like that this past year. Like, we knew they were going to probably lose Trey Burton and LeGarrette. Like, we knew they were going to lose these guys because they didn't have a ton of cap space, and other teams were going to be wanting those guys because the Eagles just won a Super Bowl. And they're, you know, those guys are going to be even more valuable in free agency because everyone sees Super Bowl and ring and all that, and that's even more. So, they're going to have some tough decisions to make, and it's going to be sad. I mean, you could look at Jason Peters too. Like, what if he decides to hang it up finally? He keeps saying every year that he's on a year-to-year basis. So there's a lot of guys on Sunday that we could potentially be seeing for the last time, and that'll be sad, but hopefully they go out on a high note.
Well, when the season does end, we'll be talking about these guys a lot more when we're going over off-season plans for this team because they have some decisions they have to make with some guys here. Some of them, like you mentioned, Super Bowl heroes and others who just joined the team this year and haven't done a whole lot. But one guy that, last thing before we get to the injury report, looking ahead to the game on Sunday, some interesting news about a former Eagle who might want to come back to Philadelphia. DeSean Jackson apparently wants out of Tampa, and the Eagles are rumored as a landing spot. And I know there was a lot of conversation around the trade deadline about the Eagles maybe looking at DeSean Jackson as a potential trade candidate because he is a field stretcher, something that the Eagles desperately need. And Jackson is a guy who's going to miss a few games every year due to injury. It's just kind of where he is in his career. He's always been a little bit fragile, but when he's in there, he still is that guy, BLG. Even as he gets older, he still has that speed. How much longer he'll have it for, who knows? But is this something you see happening this offseason? DeSean coming back?
I definitely think he's interested. That's the angle that we've seen from Josina Anderson's report, who reported that, you know, he wants out of Tampa Bay and he sold his house, apparently. The Bucks can cut him this offseason for $10 million savings, zero in dead money. So it seems like pretty easy move for them to move on. I'm sure they're going to have a new regime and they might want to, you know, start fresh and get him out of there. And in addition to all that, you have John Clark now saying that he is told DeSean would really like to return and play for the Eagles next season. And also he posted a picture of himself on Instagram, I think, wearing Allen Iverson's jersey. So, I mean, clear vibes there. Now, the question is, do the Eagles want him back? And I don't know. Obviously, Chip Kelly had a big, big part in DeSean being released. But, I mean, Howie Roseman was still the GM. Jeffrey Lurie ultimately signed off on that move. Like, if they didn't really want that to happen, then they could have prevented it, and they didn't. So, I don't know, you know, exactly that the Eagles still want him back. I think the price would have to be right, obviously, for both sides. I mean, that goes without saying for any deal. But I wonder. I just feel like DeSean still might want a little more than the Eagles will realistically be willing to offer. He's going to have a market, John. Like, he leads the league in yards per reception still with 18.9. Like, he's still, I mean, you wonder how long he is going to have that speed. Yes. But right now, he still has it. And that's a valuable skill to have. So there's going to be teams interested in him out there. I think I totally buy that he is interested in coming back. I wonder legitimately if the Eagles want him back. I just think maybe, and I know Mike Wallace isn't as good of a player, but I just think they might be able to kind of keep him cheap and he's already in the system and they don't really have to worry about off-field issues with him. That's kind of where my head's at on that one.
I'd love to see DeSean back. And frankly, I mean, I just didn't see enough of Mike Wallace to feel strongly about bringing him back next year anyway. He just didn't play at all this year. I agree. I think Mike Wallace was a good add coming into the season. It's just unfortunate he hasn't been able to see the field. And, you know, as we get into the injury report here, Mike Wallace is a guy that we're thinking maybe could see some action here on Sunday, BLG. Is there a chance we see Wallace lace them up and actually get on the field on Sunday?
Yeah, I don't think so. I think it's just too soon. You know, this is his first week back. They didn't even have a real practice on Wednesday. They just did a walkthrough. His first real practice was today on Thursday, and he was limited in that. I'm sure he's pushing the play because this is the last game that they're guaranteed at the very least. I don't know yet. It might just be too soon. And even if he does play, we talk about this all the time where the Eagles are pretty cautious about, I mean, for as much as you want to say about the medical staff, they're pretty cautious about snap count for guys who are coming off injury. I mean, you just saw that with Timmy Jernigan, who came back and he played like 26% of the snaps against the Texans. Like they try to go easy for the most part on guys who come back. So I just can't see him coming back, you know, having this huge role. Maybe if he is in there, you know, you're putting him out for a limited snap count. So we'll see. I think to me, that move was probably made in hope that, you know, that they could make the playoffs. Yeah. I think it might be a little bit more likely that he kind of comes back for wildcard weekend, which would be pretty awesome. You know, he's not going to come in here and revolutionize the offense, but just to have another guy who is a legitimate deep threat. And again, from what I saw out of him in training camp, he could still do that. We'll see how he is running as he comes off this leg fracture, this leg injury that he had. So we'll see. You know, I'm optimistic that that could get the Eagles give them some kind of boost on offense potentially. So I don't know about this week, but hopefully they make the playoffs so they can see him. Because I want to see it. You know, I want to see he doesn't have a single catch this year. I would like to see at least one big Mike Wallace down the field catch.
You just don't want to force it. That's the thing is you don't want to force Mike Wallace into the action like they tried to do with Golden Tate earlier in the season. Now they've pretty much marginalized Golden Tate, which is fine. The offense is moving the football. It's just going to be a waste of a third round pick, and that's just going to have to be how it is with Tate at the end of the day. Looking at some of the other practice notes, Jordan Hicks surprisingly did not practice on Thursday. He's got a calf issue, BLG. Are we looking at a setback here for Hicks? Do we have any information on whether or not he's in danger of missing the game on Sunday?
Yeah, that's just unfortunate and really bizarre, because again, he wasn't even listed on the Wednesday injury report, not even like as a full participant, just not even at all. So doesn't seem good. Maybe he was just resting. I doubt it. I think we would have kind of seen that listed there. I don't know. It just doesn't seem good, and it seems unfortunate.
It's some kind of indication from the team normally if it's just like, so people don't freak out.
Yeah. So I don't know. Just doesn't look good on that one.
Michael Bennett out again, but this is more of the same. He'll play on Sunday. He's just getting rested as a veteran guy who doesn't really need the practice. Sidney Jones dealing with a hamstring still. Looks like he's not going to play on Sunday either, BLG.
10 out of 35 games. That's how many games Sidney Jones has played in since being drafted by the Eagles. It's not great.
It's not good. No, not good at all. Jason Kelce did not practice, dealing with a knee, hoping he plays too. Do you think it's more than likely Kelce gets in?
It's never great. Typically, when you see a player during the week get downgraded, like he was listed as limited on Wednesday, and then he did not practice on Thursday. Now, with that said, you know, it's Jason Kelce. He played 100% of the snaps against the Texans, and I can't see him missing a must-win game. So I would assume he'll be going.
All right. And of course, Carson Wentz on the report with a back injury. He did not practice. Jason Peters and Isaac Seumalo were both limited in practice, but seems to me Seumalo looks like he'll play. Peters looks like he'll play, BLG. Yeah. But as we've seen in recent weeks, how much you get of Peters during the course of any game is always going to be a question mark.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like, okay, Doug said he's going to start. That's fine. How long is he going to stay in the game? Hopefully it's longer.
How does he finish? That's right.
For as much as people might want to get on JP for missing time and not being quite as good as he used to be, I mean, he's still better than Big V. It's clear when you watch it out there.
Oh, my gosh. Big V last week. Oh, my gosh. Against Clowney. That was ridiculous.
Doug's never going to throw his players under the bus. But the most he's going to say is like, yeah, there were some highs and lows with Big V's performance. Yeah, there were a lot of lows. Now with Seumalo, it's a little interesting to me because I didn't expect him to be limited today. I still don't know if he will play or not. We'll see how it goes in the final report. But I almost wonder what happens there. Like, if he's able to play, are they putting him back in at left guard and starting lineup, or are they sticking with Wiz? Because, you know, offensive line's played well in the past 2 weeks. I don't know. That'll be like a little bit, not super interesting very much, of course, but just a little bit interesting to see.
Well, let's get into the matchups here. And of course, a couple of weeks ago, the Eagles beat Washington 28-13 in Philadelphia. The Eagles have now won three in a row against Washington after having lost five straight before that. You know, it's kind of funny. The Redskins were they started off the season red hot, and that Alex Smith injury just absolutely destroyed their season. And now, officially out of the playoff race, they don't have anything to play for this weekend. You would think, BLG, that this is a game the Eagles could just show up and win, and they've got Josh Johnson starting at quarterback, their fourth string guy. You could joke and say, you know, how did the Eagles stop Josh Johnson? But we've seen in the past, there's a, you know, every time we approach a game like this against a third string or a fourth string quarterback in a game that means a lot to the Eagles but doesn't mean a whole lot to the other team, the name Joe Webb just pops into our minds. You know, it's that Joe Webb game against the Vikings is always going to be there, and that's kind of the nightmare scenario, is Josh Johnson has a Joe Webb type game and the Eagles just come out and for whatever reason don't have it on Sunday afternoon. That to me is the biggest worry here, BLG, because otherwise this is a Redskins team the Eagles should handle easily.
Yeah, I mean, this isn't a game where like the Redskins play their best game and they're like, well, the Eagles just couldn't do anything, you know what I mean? Like, that's not right. That's what we're talking about. Yeah. Here the Eagles, if the Eagles lose this game, it's because they beat themselves. It's because, and that's not impossible, because we've seen this team do that all year. So that'd be pretty concerning if that happens. I mean, you have to feel like, I know we can't just assume automatic win, and I'm not, but like, you have to feel good about where the Eagles are. They're playing really good football right now. And this, again, it's not just the quarterback, although that obviously helps. It's the whole team. It's the whole team. You're getting production out of like these role players. The offensive line is playing their best football of the year. And no, it's not just because Nick Foles gets the ball out quicker, because statistically, it's not even true. And I've heard that narrative so much this week. and I had to put the numbers out there. So it's not just that. But when I look at this Eagles team, like they're on a roll. And you look at this Washington team, they're very much just, I don't know, lingering. They kind of put up somewhat of a fight, you know, against Tennessee last week when they're fighting to keep their season alive. But I don't know, what are you really afraid of about this Washington team? Like, they're solid, they're not terrible, you know, they kind of are terrible. I take that back, because
I was gonna say, is there an offensive player that you're worried about?
No, who would it be? I mean, if I
AP, yeah, is that
that's
it?
What I said. If I had to pick one, it would be Adrian Peterson, because he broke off a 90-yard run against this team earlier, you know, in this year, in the very first play that Mark Sanchez came into the game. So stupid. Yeah, I mean, you look at the box score from that game, and like, no one else did anything. And now, I mean, you could say Jordan Reed, but he's not playing. They just placed him on injured their leading receiver on injured reserve, so he's not going to be there. I mean, like, what are you scared of with this team? I mean, maybe you're scared of Josh Johnson running around, and it's like you said, kind of like Joe Webb redux from 2010. But last time I checked, this game isn't being played on a Tuesday, which I think is very good news for the Eagles. I think that's just about it, I guess. So I guess it's AP and Josh Johnson running around maybe and making some plays. I don't know.
Let's talk about the Eagles on offense, what they can do, because, you know, Washington's defensive line can give the Eagles some problems. We all know Kerrigan is a monster, and that's probably a guy on defense you have to worry about. No DJ JD Swearinger this week, BLG. I mean, that whole situation has been a mess here in Washington, in the Washington DC area. That one of their best defensive players is kicked off the team for being critical of the defensive coordinator and criticizing the game plan. That's a big name not to have to worry about here this week. It's another advantage for the Eagles here coming into this game on Sunday.
Yeah, I mean, he's a Pro Bowl alternate. You're cutting
and
that guy.
And you just
guy.
Cut him.
And he was
DJ Swearing, just, we don't need you, DJ. Just get your head on.
And he was on a good deal for next year, too. He was like on a very reasonable deal. And obviously, I mean, Arizona claimed him. Like, they're number one in the claim order. Like, the first team that could get him, like, jumped at the opportunity to get him. So, definitely good news for the Eagles defense. I mean, that secondary is already missing Monte Nicholson, I think, who they already placed on reserve earlier this year, too, where they cut him. So, you know, the secondary is getting thinner, which really wasn't that awesome to begin with. You know, they had to trade for Clinton Dix midseason because they felt like they needed to address it. So, you just look at this Washington roster, and again, it's not like bottom of the league. They're kind of, the metrics indicate, though, they're kind of playing like a bottom of the league team. Like I was saying earlier, they're 30th in weighted DVOA, so kind of really stinking it up lately. I don't know, man. Like, and it's not like you fear playing down there in Washington either. like,
no, not anymore. No, the fans have abandoned this team
to begin with. They don't even want to go to it, and I don't blame them. And you're going to see a ton of Eagles fans there on Sunday. And I think if you're Washington, and I was talking to some of the guys over at Hogs Haven, they're kind of talking about how they almost hope the Eagles embarrass Washington on Sunday because they're fed up. They're fed up. I mean, and they should be. They literally have a shirt that says fed up on it, like FedEx. They are literally fed up.
Wow, that's awesome.
And they should be. It's a joke. Washington's a total joke. It's not even just Dan Snyder, although that's obviously where it starts. It's just the fact that like Bruce Allen is allowed to be here still after just total mismanagement across the board. Not even just like on the field. Like not even not being able to get football things right, but still being kind of like a good business and having a good reputation. No, they're just awful across the board. They're horrible. You know this, John, especially living in the DC area and hearing people talk about this all the time. But I almost feel bad for them in a way. I don't ultimately because they're a division rival. And it's not like, you know, if they ever do well, I'm going to be like, oh, yeah, Washington's finally not terrible again. No. I want to see them this bad, but it just makes me think that, you know, if the Eagles are in the situation, we'd be going crazy. I don't think we could handle it, to be honest. I think, you know, we always joke about Philadelphia being burned down. I think they would burn the city down if we had Dan Snyder as the owner.
Well, we did have Dan Snyder as the owner. His name was Norman Brayman.
Well,
and the city despised Norman Brayman to the point where they forced him to sell the team, essentially. You know, that's what I think of when I think of Dan Snyder. I mean, at least Snyder pays for players once in a while, whereas Brayman was someone who was notoriously cheap and basically ran every good player from the Buddy Ryan teams out of town because he refused to pay anybody and just drove people crazy in this town. Also, you know, that like the Redskins have in FedEx Field, Veterans Stadium was a horrible place to watch a game a lot of times. You know, it was not nearly as impossible to get to as FedEx Field is, but there's a I forget, I think it's in the Washington Post, where this is the first time in I think 30 years where jersey sales in Washington DC, where Redskins jerseys did not sell the most out of any of the four franchises in town. Capitals jerseys sold more than Redskins jerseys.
And they won the cup
this past year. Yeah, but I mean, but even so, I mean, you've had teams, you know, go to great heights in the Washington D.C. area before, and the Redskins are clearly the number one team in this town. Even when the Nationals are in the world in the playoffs and driving a playoff push, it's all Redskins all the time. So this is it's a miserable time to be a Washington Redskins fan. There's no doubt about it. As far as this game goes, it just doesn't feel like they have a chance against the Eagles. And the Eagles, even though they seem to be on a roll here, they do have to be careful. And I think last week we saw the offense abandon the running game, which we had both said during the preview show was probably the right thing to do, given how stout the Texans were against the run. And they used a lot of the short passing game in order to do that. Darren Sproles had a good game. And I think this week is a week they try to return to balance a little bit. They're going to be in 12 personnel a lot. They've been doing that a lot lately over the last few weeks, BLG, which means, again, Golden Tate probably doesn't see a ton of game action. You're going to see a lot of Ertz and a lot of Dallas Goedert. And I think this is a game Josh Adams has been kind of sputtering these last few weeks. I think this is a game where Adams gets himself right again and maybe gets you 75 or 80 rushing yards here as the Eagles get a little bit more balance. But overall, as an offense, they're playing their best football of the year right now. How much of that is the game plan and how much of that is simply the players executing better?
Well, when I look at what the Eagles should do here, and, you know, I think it's a mix of both, but we're talking about the run game here specifically, and as Jimmy Kemsky highlighted, the best rushing performance in any one game by an Eagles running back this season is 85 yards, which is, first of all, just very sad.
Yikes.
There's only one other team that didn't have a running back rush for 100, and that was Leonard Fournette, who had 95 twice, so he basically had it. So it's very sad, but when did that game happen, Eagles fans? Oh, yes, it happened in week 13 against Washington when Josh Adams had 85 yards on 20 carries against that defense. And, you know, he broke off a long of 18 in that game. He had some real nice chunk runs in that one. So I think you kind of hope that you can go back to him again. I mean, it's a little hard because, like, how much do you trust Josh Adams right now? I mean, this is the second time this year we've seen him fumble late in the game. Obviously, the Jaguars one didn't count, barely. You know, he barely got his butt down. And then this one, it let the Texans back into the game at that point. So the trust issues kind of not really great there. And Adams struggled against the Rams defense. He struggled against Texans. So you don't want to, like, just, you know, feed him, I think, a ton out of the gate, especially if you're not seeing it early. I mean, maybe you try it out early, see if it's there. If it's there, keep going with it. But if it's not, I mean, I wouldn't just stick with him because, you know, he hasn't really been producing it lately. And this isn't a running back rotation where you're just really trusting him to be the guy no matter what. Like, this is about feeding the hot hand. And honestly, you know, John, last week you said it should be the Darren Sproles game, and it was in your, you know, in your various
even the sun shines on a dog's rear end once in a while.
Yes,
man.
That's what I was trying to say. But I go to him again in this game.
Why not?
Yeah. I mean, what are you saving him for? Right? I mean, if this is going to be the end of his career anyway, I'm not saying you have to give him 20 touches. That's just, you know, not realistic. But give him probably a bigger workload than he's been getting lately because, boy, is he hard to stop still. And again, not just as a receiving option like we see on the wheel route, which again, the Eagles should probably just run every play, to be honest, because it seems like they can never defend it, like anyone. But on the ground, too, he's been efficient there. So I'd like to see him get some touches. I mean, dare I say Wendell Smallwood? Do I ever really want to see Wendell Smallwood get more carries? Not really.
No, you don't.
But with Adam struggling as much as he has, I just think you kind of have to take it away a little bit from him. So, you know, I'm interested to see what the running game can do here after having some kind of not so great weeks so much in the past 2 weeks overall. But I mean, you can't take the ball out of Nick Foles' hands too much, right? I mean, boy,
that's
with
right.
the success he's having. You know, you certainly don't want to just be like, all right, we're just going to run the ball and, you know, not really take too many shots. I mean, they're going to have opportunities to take shots, and Nick Foles is going to take some shots as we've seen in the past couple of weeks. So, overall, yeah. I think there's reason to believe the Eagles can have that balance. The offensive line is just playing so, so well. They're opening holes in the run game, pass protection wise. I think they've only allowed here. I have it right here. They've only allowed 2 sacks and 7 hits in the last 2 games combined. That's really good. And, you know, you think about some of the guys they faced over the past couple of weeks, like J.J. Watt and Aaron Donald.
Oh, Lane Johnson on Watt last week was unbelievable.
What did those guys do against the Eagles? What did J.J. Watt and Aaron Donald do against the Eagles? Nothing. Who did something against the Eagles last week? It was Jadeveon Clowney, and he was going up against Big V. Hopefully, again, Big V will not be in the game. Hopefully, it'll be Jason Peters, and you'll feel better about that one. I mean, you look back to the first game earlier this year between Washington and the Eagles, and look, Ryan Kerrigan always owned this team. He is great. In that game earlier this year, he had 2 tackles and 1 tackle for loss. That is nothing for a Ryan Kerrigan game against the Eagles. Like, Lane shut him down earlier this year. So hopefully see that again. I think there's reason to believe it can be the case. I think there's reason to believe the Eagles can be balanced in this attack. And I just think there's room for optimism here.
Last thing about the Eagles, and one of the things that has really helped them is the secondary, dare I say, has stabilized.
Yeah, you're saying it every week, John.
Yeah, and it continues to be true. And I think when the book is written on the 2018 Eagles season, one of the players we look back at the end of the season and say, this is one of the guys that helped save the season, essentially, is Avante Maddox. When you look at how versatile he's been and the level of play that he has provided this team, especially as a fourth-round rookie, he's emerged, and I said it a few weeks ago, I still think it's true, I think he's probably this team's best draft pick since Carson Wentz, just given the fact that he has saved this secondary's bacon. And Craven LeBlanc, let's also give him a little bit of credit, too, for coming in off the street and actually providing some stability in the secondary as well. But Schwartz had some interesting things to say about both those players earlier this week, didn't he?
Yeah, I mean, saying Maddox is like Cortland Finnegan already, that's pretty high praise from Schwartz.
That's high praise,
You know, it's not like Finnegan was, you know, like Revis or anything, but he was a really, you know, he was a tough player, physical, too. And obviously, guy who would get in other people's heads. I don't know if Maddox is quite that style fully of player just because Finnegan was so intense, but for Schwartz to go out there and praise Maddox like he has, that tells you a lot about what he thinks of him. And yeah, LeBlanc too. And I remember saying this, John, and I want to give myself a pat on the back here. I called out Joe DeCamera when I remember the Eagles got LeBlanc and because he were like, well, you know, I like Joe. This is nothing personal against Joe. I just didn't like the point that he was trying to make. He's like, well, you just cut Dexter McDougal, and now you're bringing LeBlanc in. How could he possibly be any good? And again, the difference there was that they claimed LeBlanc on waivers. It wasn't like he was just out in the market the whole season like McDougal was. Lions had cut LeBlanc, which brings me to an interesting point that I feel like we haven't talked about before. Anyone has, is that what if you just consider LeBlanc to be part of the Golden Tate trade? Because both players came from the Lions, and they both came in that same week. They both came before the Eagles left their bye week. So, kind of, I mean, does it make the trade suddenly worth it? No, but it makes it like a little less worse, right? Like if you gave up a third for LeBlanc and Tate, I mean, is it a great trade?
That's better.
No, but it's like, okay, it's not a total disaster maybe. So it doesn't work like that. I know you can't think of that way directly, but I thought that's kind of a fun angle to it. And yeah, he's been great. And the way Schwartz talked about him in his press conference this week said he really solidified that nickel corner spot. And LeBlanc is under contract for next year. I wasn't fully aware of that until recently. So, you know, you bring him back next year, maybe he's your slot guy, or at least he'll have a chance to be in the mix or compete for a job, or at least be a really good backup. So really nice find by the Eagles pro personnel staff this season. And as a whole, as you said, John, just the secondary suddenly being just, dare I say, like trustworthy in some respects, like you feel like they're not going to be a total disaster out there, which has really come a long way after at one point, just a couple weeks ago or earlier this month, when the Eagles literally were out without their top five starting cornerbacks. So they've really come a long way here. And I think you have to give credit to the players. I think you have to give credit to probably Corey Unlin and the coaching staff and Jim Schwartz as a whole, you know, to get those guys playing above their heads, like they get some credit too. So hats off to them. It's been impressive. Don't get torched by Josh Johnson and Washington this week and make us look like idiots for praising you. Please. Thank you. And the pass rush helps, obviously. Getting that rush really, you know, does them favors.
And that's been a big deal, too. Michael Bennett and Brandon Graham. And Chris Long had a big week against the Texans last week, too. He hasn't gotten much talk either. But, Chris Long stepped up big against the Texans last Sunday as well. Just hope that defense can avoid any more fourth quarter meltdowns like we've seen a few times. It's less likely coming up against a Washington offense that struggles to do anything. But you certainly just want to get a big enough lead so that you don't have to worry about it here on Sunday afternoon. And we'll give you our Eagles-Washington picks here in just a second. First, let's run down a couple other NFL games. And we'll start with a big AFC matchup here, BLG in Tennessee. The Colts taking on the Titans. The winner gets at least a wild card spot here in this one. And Indianapolis is favored by 3 points on the road at Tennessee, BLG. You know, Tennessee has run roughshod over the NFC East this year. At the time that the Eagles lost to the Titans, it felt like a bad loss. But here the Titans are, a playoff team last year, threatening to get back into the postseason. They've beaten some good teams this year as well. What do you make of this game?
I think the Colts are going to win. The Titans are way too unpredictable to really count on them to do anything anyway. But I just feel like the Colts are the better team, and from what we know about them and the journey they've gone through this season and how much they've improved, which is really, you know, pretty impressive. They started out 1-5, and now here they are in week 17 looking like one of the better teams, or at least one of the more feistier teams in the AFC playoff picture there. So I think it's going to be Colts. I will take the Fighting Frank Reichs, as our dear friend Gio Capadia calls them, over at Birds with Friends. They're my pick.
I'll take Tennessee just because Tennessee, it's been so weird for them this year. It looks like Marcus Mariota is going to play on Sunday. The Tennessee has the game at home. Andrew Luck is certainly a more accomplished quarterback than Mariota is, but I don't know. It's just something about Tennessee. They have popped up and they've played some tough games this year, and I like Tennessee certainly with the spread, and I like Tennessee, I think, to win the game outright. So I'll take the Titans, buddy.
So what's the conversation like that when Frank Reich loses the play? Wasn't that good of a coach all along.
That's right. Let's talk about Dallas at the New York Giants. Giants favored by 6 points over the Cowboys, who will undoubtedly be resting most of their players. They have nothing left to play for here. They're the NFC East champs. They can't move out of that number four spot. And you've got the Giants here, BLG, who, if they win, again, hurt their draft position. But the Giants have played really good football, and I think the Giants win this game easily. What about you?
Well, that's what the line's telling you, right? That if the Cowboys are playing their starters, the Giants obviously are not being favored by right. six here. So I love that because Pat Shurmur, baby, just the master of getting to week 17. No one does it better than ruining a team's draft position than Pat Shurmur. I love it so much. And he's obviously been doing that with some of these Giants wins since they've pretty much been eliminated from the playoff picture. So I just love it because, once again, and unfortunately we had to see it with the Eagles back in 2016 when he took over for the final game. I was so pissed. I was like, come on. Sam Bradford had his best game of the season that week. I was like, are you kidding me? Like, they're eliminated and they need to get a better draft pick to get a better quarterback. And you guys are like going all out to win. I mean, I know they have to do it. It's their jobs, but I hated to see it still.
Yeah.
So I'm going to love to see it this week when the Giants go out there and, you know, they give Saquon the ball like 500 times just to be like, yeah, see, this pick was right at number two. And Eli, he's looking great. We don't even need a young quarterback. So that's my hope. And the Giants, from what I understand, can pick as low as 12 in the first round. And that is very important to me for them to be picking not high enough to get a quarterback. And really, we really need the Giants to win and the Jaguars to lose so we can have Jacksonville ahead of that Giants pick, you know, so they can get the quarterback before the Giants possibly can. So that is my hope. Really cheering you on, Giants, this week, and I'm taking you.
Do it, Giants. You be you. Chicago at Minnesota. The Vikings, 4.5-point favorites over the Bears at home. BLG, this is obviously a game we need Chicago to win. I got to take Chicago in this game because I think it's at least close. I think 4.5 is a big line for the Vikings, and I think the Bears are going to play. I think they're going to play reasonably hard. I think they're going to play most of their starters, most of the game. I think there's enough motivation here for Chicago to play as hard as they can. I think the Bears are a better team than the Vikings. I do think, you know, like you said, Minnesota plays pretty well at home. So they've only lost two games there this year. But I guess maybe I'm speaking on hope more than anything else. But I'll take Chicago in this one. What say you?
I have one more Giants point I want to get to. So here's the list of teams with fewer winning seasons than the Giants since 2013. The Browns, and that's the end of the list. And that list evaporates if the Browns win on Sunday. That's a tweet from Greg Rosenthal.
Oh, wow.
So just wanted to get that in there.
Good stat.
This is really tough for me, man, because I just feel like Vikings have played well at home. I just can't fully trust the Bears to go all out for this game. Like, because the Vikings need it more. You know, like, the Bears don't need it more. The Vikings need it more. But it all comes down to, I feel like my brand has been leading to this moment. Like, this, because even a couple weeks ago, I did a post about, like, takeaways from the NFL. And I include, usually it's like an Eagles-themed kind of slant from when the Eagles don't play. Mm-hmm. And for no reason at all, really, I just included a note about Kirk Cousins. Kind of fits my narrative with him and my brand with him. And all of a sudden, I feel like maybe that wasn't so irrelevant. Maybe that wasn't meant to be. Maybe this whole thing, my Kirk Cousins bit, is still alive and well for a reason. And with that in mind, I have to take the Bears. Getting the points, I just have to do it. Kirk Cousins, man, doesn't show up big in the big games. He just doesn't. We've seen it time and time again. He hasn't done it. And I'm going to say he doesn't do it again. And the Eagles will... Well, we'll get to the Eagles pick.
Yeah, the Kirk Cousins corollary in full effect here in Minnesota on Sunday afternoon. Last game to look at, the 49ers at the Rams. Rams favored by 10 points. I think we both believe the Rams are going to win this game. But the question is whether or not San Francisco can keep it close. You mentioned a couple of different numbers that San Francisco has been keeping games close. They've been playing pretty well this year. Over the last half of the season, at least. And so I think the Rams probably end up winning this game by more than 10, so I'll take LA, but I think it stays within that number for most of the game, maybe at least until it gets into the fourth quarter, BLG.
I'll take the 49ers with the points. Why not? They're feisty lately. The Rams haven't looked great. I mean, they got back on track, you know, with their win over the Cardinals last week, but I mean, outside of that, haven't been looking so great. You know, Jared Goff not playing so well. So I can't just fully trust the Rams. And again, it comes down to the Shanahan-McVay thing for me. I just think, like, that's the perfect way for the 49ers to end their season. Like, they're not so concerned with draft positioning. Like, they already have two quarterbacks now, apparently, on their roster. So they can go out and they can win this one and they can feel good about going into next year if they beat the Rams. So give me the points and let's get to the Eagles game.
All right, Eagles versus Washington. Eagles favored by 7 here on the road in the nation's capital. I think the Eagles are going to win this game, BLG. I think they probably win it handily, so I'll take the Eagles as a 7-point road favorite here. The Eagles have been trending in the right direction. The Redskins are trending in the wrong direction here. This always has the possibility of being one of those games where things just don't go their way. But it feels to me like we might be past that now. And I think I can easily see a scenario where the Eagles win and the Vikings win. And even though the Eagles finished up strong here at the end of the season, they don't get rewarded for it. But the Eagles can only handle their own business. And I think that's what they'll do in Washington on Sunday afternoon. So even though I picked the Eagles to lose to the Texans last week, I'm going to redeem myself this week. I'm going to take the Eagles over the Redskins, BLG. What's your pick, my friend?
Yeah, my head tells me that the Eagles win and the Vikings win, unfortunately.
That's me too.
And yep. The Eagles don't make the play. It just feels like the Eagles don't deserve to make it. The way they're playing right now, they absolutely do.
I know that. I know what you mean, yeah.
On the course of the whole year, they had those opportunities against the Titans and the Panthers. And now, and this is something I want to write about after the season, they've had some bad luck too, in the sense that two of the worst calls of the entire season ultimately went against the Eagles' way. And I'm talking about the Kirk Cousins BS penalty on Clay Matthews that should not have been a penalty and would have been a pick by Cousins. And the Vikings and the Packers would not have tied. The Vikings would have lost that game. They should have lost that game. And so all of a sudden, the Eagles wouldn't have to be in this spot that they are in right now,
right,
needing the Vikings to lose. And the Cowboys, BS non-fumble, clear recovery, stupid call. So now, again, I can't fully blame that as the Eagles not making the playoffs, because you can't put yourself in a position where bad calls are going to ultimately dictate where your season goes. But I'm just saying it's very unfortunate that that factors into the equation. So that's where my head is at. But my heart tells me that this season is not over yet. How can you possibly count out Nick Foles under center? I know it's not all up to him, obviously, in terms of getting the help from the Bears, but man, just don't you feel maybe logically, and that's where I'm at, my head thinks the Eagles aren't going to make it, but don't you just in your core feel like this season isn't over yet? They didn't win those last two games against the Rams and Texans just for this to be season over week 17. It just doesn't feel right. And look, that doesn't guarantee anything. Maybe it's just a feeling and the feeling is wrong, but to me, I just feel like it's going to happen.
No, I
maybe
agree.
That's wishful thinking.
It feels like 1988 and it feels like 2008, BLG. It does.
It feels like they're not done yet. So I'll take the Eagles to win, obviously. And I'm going to take them to win 26-16. Kind of a weird score, but I think they cover. I think they win. And then my heart of hearts tells me the Eagles are going to the playoffs.
Well, from your lips to God's ears, buddy. And it would be a really nice way to finish this season that seemed like it was going to be a lost season, a season of a hangover, Super Bowl hangover. It just maybe took a little while for the ibuprofen to kick in here late in the season to cure the hangover. But the Eagles in week 17 playing for their playoff lives. And BLG, one last really exciting piece of news before we get out of here. If you're on Apple Podcasts and you check out the top 200 chart among sports and recreation, you will find Bleeding Green Nation at number 82 in their top 200, ahead of Baseball Tonight with Buster Olney, ahead of the Steve Austin Show, ahead of some
take
other.
Take that, Stone Cold.
That's right, Stone Cold. What do you think about that?
Please don't actually hold that against me. I'm terrified.
Yeah, please no, don't come here. But no, this is a big deal. I mean, for Bleeding Green Nation to be back, to be up at number 82 in these Apple Podcast rankings, it's a testament to what you have been doing and Michael Kiss has been doing and Ben Solak has been doing on this podcast each and every day. And it's awesome. This 2017 season has been awesome. And if it ends on Sunday, it's been a great ride, even though the season has been uneven and up and down. Hopefully it's going to keep going. But this podcast is growing. It is moving. And that is a credit to you also, to the listeners who have found the podcast once again and made it your home for Eagles podcasts. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, it's awesome, man. And include yourself too in there, John. We're all part of the team here. It's really awesome. For this to be, again, a brand new feed back in, what, August we made this thing? And,
right.
And look, there was honestly, on my end, a lot of uncertainty, like how this thing was going to look. Like this is, you know, we had to relaunch the whole thing from scratch. And that's a very frustrating process. And obviously everyone knows my frustrations with that. They've been well documented. But, you know, for us to be here at 82 already, and again, the top single team focus, you know, not like whole league or
right.
general sports, just like we only cover the Philadelphia Eagles, folks. And and for us to be in that spot doesn't just, I mean, put us aside. Like, I don't, this isn't just about like, oh, we're so great. No, it's not that. It's that you guys listening to this, the Eagles fans make that happen. Like, you guys are so passionate. And this is why, you know, like it's so, I think people hear best fan and it feels cheesy, but like when you see stuff like this, I mean, how could you not believe you're the best fans when
right.
you can make things like this happen? So that's incredible to me. Again, one more note I wanted to say about the Eagles themselves is that if they make the playoffs, they'll be the first team in the NFC East to go to the playoffs back-to-back years. You know, again, we've talked about how there hasn't been a repeat winner since 2004, and there won't be again unless the Cowboys win in 2019, which hopefully they don't. but there hasn't been a playoff team in NFC East in back-to-back years since the 2009 and 2010 Eagles seasons. So it's been 8 years. So that would wow. be kind of a little bit of an accomplishment there just to make it. So hopefully that's the case. Hopefully you keep listening here with us, leaving those reviews, leaving those ratings, because that's what it gets us, folks. It moves us up in the rankings, which are totally arbitrary, and we have no idea how they work, but we'd love to be there. it makes us all very happy, especially Benjamin Solak, who is constantly checking those things. So
absolutely.
Thank you all once again. This potentially, John, could be our final preview show of the season. Hopefully not. Hopefully we have a playoff game in preview here, but it's been a great ride so far. And no matter what happens, we'll be here off season, playoffs, whatever, and it'll be awesome.
Absolutely. It's been a great ride here in 2018 so far. Let's hope it keeps on rolling as the Eagles take on the Washington Redskins on Sunday afternoon. That will do it for episode number 29 of BGN Radio. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Again, follow Brandon Lee Gauton on Twitter, at Brandon Gauton. You can follow me, at John Stolness. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll talk to y'all next time right here on BGN Radio.
That doesn't make sense.
My name is Spencer Hall.
My name is Jason Kirk.
My name is Ryan Nanny.
And when we combine, we form
the Shutdown Fullcast.
Voltron!
I keep telling you, we're not Voltron.
The Shutdown Fullcast is technically a college football podcast, but it's also a show about
lawn care disasters,
regional grocery stores we love,
Tennessee Batman,
homeowners associations,
Bears in video games.
I mean, there's also some actual football discussion, like about coaches having huge contracts, or coaches making terrible decisions, or coaches saying really stupid things.
Or the NCAA saying really stupid things.
Yeah, there's lots of stupid things in this big, dumb, beautiful sport.
Sometimes we talk about football games.
Allegedly.
If you want to take college football exactly as seriously as it deserves to be taken, come find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever else you listen to podcasts like this one.
The Shutdown Fullcast.
It's not Voltron.